Okay, folks, we're going to start in a couple of minutes. And I'm just going through the speaker cards. Mr. McPherson, you provided me with two cards. One says public comment, which is general public comment. The other one is agenda item 20, which is also public comment. So you want to speak, I think, at both time slots, right?
You can't hear anyone.
Delososos.
I had one. I actually had three. You tossed out one.
Toss one of them out?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was going to speak at public comment and then at item 23.
Okay. Okay. Here's public comment. Public comment. This is 23. Public comment. Public comment. Folks, I'm assuming if you've given me a card that says, doesn't have an agenda item, but it says Los Osos, CDO, and wastewater plant, and I'm assuming that this is kind of a more of a general comment?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I thought there was going to be an opportunity to speak.
But we have, you know, there's two periods coming up. One is the status report by the county on Los Osos. And that has a public comment period following it. And then we have a general public comment period about anything not on the agenda. And that will follow that. So when I don't have an agenda item checked off here, I'm not quite sure what category to put it in.
General,
that's why I'm asking.
I didn't want to be confined. I was here at 11 o'clock to speak at a general, not on the agenda. I didn't want to be confined to my comment.
Okay.
That's why I wanted to be heard under general.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Okay. Are we ready to proceed? Okay, Mr. Thomas, would you like to introduce this next agenda item?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is item number 23. It is an update from the County of San Luis Obispo on their efforts to construct a wastewater treatment facility in Los Osos. And here to provide the update is Supervisor Bruce Gibson and Project Director Pablo Obrin.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. For the brevity, a brief staff report and introduction, I do have with me Deputy Director of Public Works, Pablo Obrin, who's also the project director. My introductory comments here, very short. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you again to continue updating you on the progress of San Luis Obispo County's work toward a wastewater solution for Los Osos. Since we appeared before you in July, a tremendous amount has happened, and Pablo is going to explain that to you in more detail. I think you're going to find that in the course of the last 2 months, you're going to hear about as much new information today as you heard on July 6th when we were with you in Watsonville. At the conclusion of Pablo's remarks, I have a couple of concluding comments, and with that, I will give it over to Mr. Obrin.
Mr. Obrin, before you start, I need to check and make sure that John Richard is with us. John, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thanks. Great.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Young, members of the board and the public.
I'm sorry, I had a suggestion to say who John is. John Richards is the board's counsel on this project, and he is with us via telephone today.
Okay. Chairman Young, members of the board, Pavel Ogren with the San Luis Obispo County Public Works Department. And I'm not sure if the screen there, if we want to try to turn down the light there, if that's at all possible, so that that has a little bit of better clarity as I walk through this PowerPoint presentation. Certainly, I also appreciate the time to come and make this presentation to your board. Our last discussion was in Watsonville in July. And as an introduction, we're going to primarily focus in on our work efforts since your last board meeting, as well as discuss some of our future steps, talk about some of the project issues, and then public discussions and information. And just wanted to make sure that everybody, especially who's in the audience or who may be viewing this from Los Osos, understands that on September 29th, that's a Saturday in the afternoon from 1 to 5 p.m., we'll be having an open house at Sunnyside Elementary School, which is going to provide the public with another opportunity to come in and talk with us and do question and answers regarding what our project efforts are overall. Quick announcement as well, John Diodati in our office is handling ballot questions. His number is 788-6633. We've certainly been having a lot of questions as soon as the ballots went out last week. And on the bottom there, our project website, we're also responding to questions from the public that are posted to the website itself. And I'll have that slide up on the screen at the conclusion of my comments as well. Just real quickly, walking through a summary of the prior review in Watsonville, we walked through the significant dates, June 19 of 06, when the board adopted its policies covering AB 2701 and the project strategies that we have recently concluded on August 28th that led to the board's decision to direct staff to conduct the Prop 218 ballot proceedings. It was October 3rd that the board approved $2 million out of countywide taxpayer funds for these initial efforts. December, we had gotten our consultants primarily on board in advance of the January 1st effective date of AB 2701, which is when the work began. It was March that the board appointed a technical advisory committee that had three working groups, an environmental, a finance, and a engineering/water resources group. It was also in March that we released our rough screening report, which initiated the public review of our work efforts. Separate from our department's work efforts, the planning department on March 27th had brought their resource capacity study to the Board of Supervisors, and at that time the board adopted a level 3 water resource level of severity for Los Osos, which is the highest level of severity under the county's resource management system, which is part of the county's general plan. And then May 30th, we released our public draft fine screening report, and we were in the middle of that public comment period when we made our report to your board in July. Let's see. I accidentally hit the end instead of the page down. Our work efforts since July and through August 28th is that on July 17th, the board adopted the policies with regard to who would be voting in the Prop 218. And as a quick reminder, it is the developed property owners within the prohibition zone. Our challenge associated with being able to propose assessments on undeveloped properties relates to the fact that there's a number of resource constraints that exist in Los Osos. And at this point in time, we cannot provide undeveloped property owners with any guarantee that they could actually connect to a wastewater project once it was constructed. That evidence has been part of the documentation of the Coastal Commission and the Coastal Development Permit process associated with the LOCSD project. And even though that permit has since expired, it's still the official position of the Coastal Commission and it's certainly documented in strong evidence. On July 24th, the Planning Department went back to the Board of Supervisors to get more specific direction on the water resource issues in Los Osos, and the Planning Department is currently working on a number of items in order to address the water resource constraint. On August 7th itself, the Board considered the status of the Coastal Development Permit for the Los Osos project, and I am walking through some of these relatively quickly. In the written report that we provided to your board, we have additional details and you know, we'll certainly be glad to answer the questions at your pleasure at the conclusion. But in any case, the coastal development permit itself, the board directed us not to extend, seek an extension of the permit for the Los Osos project. One of the primary considerations on that had to do with the board's established policy from 2006 to not assume any of the liabilities of the Los Osos Community Services District. In addition, under any scenario, we know fully well that we will be walking through the Coastal Commission in our project efforts. Again, we were directed not to pursue an extension of that project. I want to make sure to reiterate that the work efforts that have been done in Los Osos historically and the issuance of the original permit certainly give us a lot of clear direction on the expectations of the Coastal Commission, and consequently we are confident that our ability to walk through this process will be relatively efficient because of the historical documentation and the fact that they are very clear on what the conditions and what their expectations are. On August 14th, that was one of our big days. That was when the board considered the project screening analysis, the pro-con analysis that was provided by our technical advisory committee, and approved project selection strategies. The approval of project selection strategies, we believe, is very important because it identifies many of our future work efforts after the Prop 218 election, and I will be touching on those in a little bit more detail as I proceed. August 21st, then, was the date that the board took its first formal action. There are technical resolutions that are required associated with an assessment district adopting the boundary map and directing us to undertake proceedings in accordance with state statutes. Then on August 28th is when the board took the formal action of preliminarily approving the assessment engineer's report. They can't do final approval until after we know the results of the Prop 218 ballot proceedings. That on August 28th, and they also approved the form of the Prop 218 ballots and instructed the clerk of the board to initiate those ballot proceedings. That was on Tuesday, August 28th, and on that Friday, the clerk of the board had indeed had all of the ballots out, and this week property owners have started to receive those ballots, and in fact, we have already received a number of them back already. The overall status of our work efforts then, again, the direction to proceed with the Prop 218 ballot proceedings was the first major milestone under the direction from 2006, and we are pleased that we are ahead of schedule and we are under budget. In addition, there's been extensive community input. From April through the end of August, the Technical Advisory Committee had approximately 25 public meetings and input, and then they separately, as subcommittees, had about 75 separate working group meetings, about 25 for each of those working groups, again, financial, environmental, and then the engineering water resources group. Certainly there's been a lot of public interaction addressing community comments and concerns, and I think that we have some TAC members in the audience, and I want to express a lot of appreciation for their volunteer efforts in helping us move forward on the overall wastewater project efforts. Of course, one of the items that is very much in the forefront of everybody's minds are cost estimates. Overall, this is an illustration of the different components of the project. The collection system itself is the single most expensive component, comprising about 65% of project costs. Treatment and the disposal reuse are each around 15%, getting us up to about 95%. And then the treatment site and the biosolids are important issues. Certainly the treatment site is an issue that is very much on the forefront of the community's minds. Biosolids is an issue that has a lot of implications on a green project, and even though they're not significant in terms of the overall project costs, they still have significance in terms of community acceptability. Total construction costs, we have a relatively wide range, $93 to $150 million, and that's based on today's dollars. The wide range is a result of a number of the different options that we have been looking at, and our engineers went through a very detailed development of cost estimates. When I step back and I compare from a sort of a common sense or a big picture approach on cost estimates, these numbers, one of the points that had been made about the Tri-W project in the community, that you know the bids had come in high and there's a lot of concerns about that. And so how do we compare those project efforts macroscopically with our detailed efforts, and they are in line. One of the big challenges that we see with the project that if indeed a different treatment plan at a different site is developed, and I have to say if indeed, because prior to the CEQA process, we can't prejudice different project alternatives. When we step back, one of our big challenges is that, yes, there is a lot of potential to save a significant amount of money with respect to the treatment facilities themselves. It's our opinion that the treatment plant and the bid of about $50 million at the Tri-W project is about twice of what we would normally expect on a treatment plant of that size, of just over 1 million gallons per day. But the challenge is that with scheduled delays, then we have inflation that's eating away at that. So with different potential treatment plants at a different site, certainly we have the opportunity to save money, we believe, but at the same time fighting the cost of delays and inflation, that will be a challenge. And so in $2007 dollars, again, on a macroscopic basis, this does make a lot of common sense. We needed to inflate these numbers, though, to 2011, which is our estimated midpoint of construction and total project cost. At that time, then, is estimated between about $134 and $210 million. I'll talk again with respect to our project strategies in a little bit about our approaches to developing the least costly project alternative for the community. We have also then done and breaking down how those costs relate to monthly cost estimates, and we did it in a number of different scenarios. The information that's in your written report is what we presented to the board on August 14th. These numbers have been slightly adjusted since then based on some refinement of our financial model. But in any case, we ran a number of different scenarios based on different debt assumptions. These different sample projects, we have high and low estimates associated with them. We also included the Tri-W project. And essentially, there's three different components. At the bottom, the blue is the monthly equivalent costs associated with assessments. That's, of course, not paid on a monthly basis, and I'll illustrate that in a minute. Those assessments can only cover special benefits, though, and so capital costs associated with general benefits would be on top of that, as well as monthly O&M, which is the red portion. And then the top portion is our estimate of the equivalent cost for property owners of their own private costs, costs associated with, like, decommissioning the existing septic tanks and their on-lot costs. Those aren't costs that are paid to the county, but still, nevertheless, they're costs that would be incurred by property owners. We ran a couple scenarios, as I mentioned. This is Scenario A and Scenario B. The difference is essentially different assumptions with respect to debt. The State Revolving Fund loan program is certainly a good low interest rate program. Current interest rate is about 2.35%. The requirement in California is that it's repaid over a 20-year period under existing programs. In contrast, the sale of municipal bonds, current market rates are around 5%, and it's pretty traditional to run those or to repay those over a 30-year period. And what the conclusion is that SRF over 20 years or municipal bonds over 30 years, that the monthly costs right up front are about the same. Certainly, if you pay something out over 20 years, then you're not going to have the interest and other costs from years 20 to 30. And so the benefit of the SRF program is that in years 21 to 30, that cost component would go away. But nevertheless, on a monthly basis, it's a pretty tight range on those two different financing. As a side note, we have been working with staff of the State Water Board. Our bond council has been working with legal counsel of the State Water Board to identify the possibility of the California State SRF program considering a 30-year extended financing program. When we met with EPA officials in Washington, D.C., they had identified a number of states, in fact, are doing so. If such a program could be adopted in California, then it could provide some real cost savings to the project. And I'll touch on that in a second as well. But nevertheless, we are working with our bond council and State Water Bond Council to try to see if there's possibilities and other approaches to the SRF program. These cost estimates also include the assumption that there would be compliance with the governor's signing message under AB 2701. The governor's signing message said that the expectation is that the county would make sure that the $6.5 million that had been loaned to the LOCSD has in fact been repaid, or provisions would be established so that it could be repaid. We have not yet taken a position on whether we believe that should or should not happen, but for the purposes of being conservative in our cost estimates, we do recognize that the governor is the governor and his policy position, if nothing else, is significant to consider. So we have included in these cost estimates the repayment, the assumption that the $6.5 million would be repaid. When we go on to scenario C, then, this is more of the optimistic cost scenario. This does assume that we could get 30-year extended financing. It assumes that we would not have, the federal grants that we're pursuing of approximately $35 million. We're also pursuing $10 million in Proposition 50 grants. It assumes that the governor's signing message would not have to be met. And so this scenario does not show the repayment of the $6.5 million. And under this scenario, certainly the project costs on a monthly equivalent basis would be significantly less than our more conservative assumptions in scenarios A and B. This chart then does is take our three different scenarios, A, B, and C, with the blue being the high cost estimates, the red being the low cost estimates, and it shows that again, in A and B, we have a number of different technologies. And one of the points that I have been stressing to the community is that while technologies can make a difference and pursuing the least costly project alternative is important, the financing terms associated with a project can actually have a larger swing on what the monthly costs are. And as, again, I'll be talking through the project strategies, that's why financing has been a critical component of our overall project efforts as well. Moving on then, our monthly cost estimates and how do they actually sort of stack up. And this is based on the monthly equivalent. So we have a monthly cost estimate with O&M being approximately $40, monthly equivalent for assessments being $150, but those would actually be paid on property tax bills, so the semi-annual property tax bill would be about $900. These numbers are for sort of a typical single-family residential unit where we have the proposed assessment of about $25,000. And certainly mobile home parks, condominiums, commercial properties, the numbers would be somewhat different. But what we're analyzing here is sort of on the normal single-family residence and what the typical family household would see. Monthly capital then would be the other debt we needed to sell aside from the assessments. That would be, for example, covering general benefits. We can also place that on property tax bills. And so the normal household in Los Osos, our cost estimates are about, their monthly bill would be about $40, and then their semi-annual tax bill would be about $960. The total annual cost estimate would then be about $2,400. The monthly on-lot costs, again, abandoning the existing septic systems and connecting to a community wastewater system, would have an equivalent cost of about $50. That assumption is based on like a 20-year loan of an equity line of credit at 8.25%. That then is how we come up with our total monthly cost estimate of about $250. Our ranges would show in some of the scenarios that total we've said we estimate as high as about $275. But one of the things is this is our best estimate that we have right now, and I think that certainly we've been speaking to the community in terms of how much money do we think people should have the expectation if there's no grants that they would have to set aside out of their monthly budget, and that's what this is reflective of. One of the items that we have talked about before, too, and the community has asked us to look at is the affordability analysis. We actually did this quite some time ago. This is affordability analysis under the EPAs for different age groups, and then with the project cost estimates that could be pretty wide depending on if we have grants or we don't have grants. But one of the, again, the community concerns is, have we done an affordability analysis? The answer is yes, we've done an affordability analysis. And it's important that the primary purpose of this is, again, to be able to work with state and federal representatives to express the need for grants And when we think that, even though it's a pretty basic affordability analysis, it certainly has pressed home the point and been successful. Beyond the affordability analysis, we're now turning to economic impact analysis. And there are certain financing strategies that are important on economic impact analysis. For example, the difference between property tax collections with or without a project. With the implementation of a project, certainly the county can expect that property taxes in Los Osos would be higher than without an implementation of a project. And today at lunch, I met with Bill Watkins out of the UCSB forecast, and we're interested in talking to him about doing that, because on August 14th, the board did authorize us to consider and work on tax increment financing, with the idea being that with the implementation of a project, we should expect that property taxes would be higher than without the implementation of a project, and that increment would be beneficial to push it back into the community, especially targeting low-income households that would be affected the most by the project. So we got the board's green light on August 14th, and I've started working on those efforts already. So after affordability analysis becomes economic impact analysis. Also addressing mitigating affordability challenges, this is a graph that's just a general illustration, and I've sort of talked about them already. There's a number of components, financing terms, federal grants, state grants, technologies, and those are all things that we're addressing in order to help mitigate affordability challenges. In financing and affordability, certainly the Proposition 218 ballots that are out in the households right now are the first and most significant thing in order to be able to pursue project financing. And they're also important for affordability, because being able to move forward and getting a project done now is extremely important. The longer that it takes to get a project done, we certainly know that inflation is one of our worst enemies. The affordability, though, itself, and these are incorporated into a number of the boards, is pursuing the least costly project, the least expensive funding. The least expensive funding is certainly why we still believe that the SRF package needs to be on the table. With respect to grants, it's the government and non-governmental grants. Federal and state we talked about, and again on the tax increment financing, that could provide some grants from the county itself. Project selection strategies are where I'm going to move next, but those project selection strategies approved on August 14th were very critical to our overall pursuit of mitigating affordability. On the selection strategies, and these I'm summarizing under the selection strategies, and if your board so pleases later, I actually have in the PowerPoint all of the actions that were adopted by the board and the details. But the first is the utilization of design-build methods of public contracting. And that's where you have opportunities that come out of challenges. And in this particular case, because a system has already been designed, we do believe that there's good opportunity to utilize design-build methods of public contracting so we can get the different technologies to compete with each other. And so we outlined the strategies, and the board approved those. And that is an opportunity that is kind of rare. Normally in public contracting, you select your project, and then you get private industry to compete through a bidding process on that particular technology. But again, because of all the work that has been done on the Los Osos Wastewater Project, we see a very solid process of being able to get the different technologies to compete with each other. The ability to get those different technologies to compete with each other, though, rests on a Proposition 218 vote that is not technology or project specific. So bringing in the least costly project really does require moving forward with the Prop 218 at this time. Also, we did have gone and developed a policy platform on the STEP collection alternative. We appreciate the work of your staff. Certainly, your staff has pointed out to us some very valid concerns regarding this STEP collection alternative, and we've provided them even recent correspondence from last week. Certainly, we recognize that it is the job of your staff to identify concerns and issues, and it's really our job in order to identify solutions to those. And so often in the permitting process, we have to put forth a project, and then we get into that level of detail. And so we appreciate your staff's efforts in, even prior to our application process, identifying concerns so that we can help resolve them right up front. Or at least have those dialogues and those communications are extremely important. Also, as previously identified, co-equal environmental analysis, that was originally adopted in June of 2006, but we identified additional strategies that our board adopted, including addressing the State Marine Reserve that has been recently designated, AB 32, and a number of issues that have been significant concerns to the community. Consideration of regional options during the preparation of the project EIR, and that includes regional treatment, regional septage. The County of San Luis Obispo does not have a regional facility to accept septage right now, and as a potential revenue source to the Los Osos Wastewater Project, that's certainly a viable option. And because of the water management issues in Los Osos, addressing regional water options as well is going to be important. Consideration of a decentralized community wastewater project. A proposal from private industry was submitted recently. An individual named Pio Lombardo submitted a proposal for decentralized treatment, and the board gave us essentially a three-step approval to address that. And there has also been another recent proposal by private industry within the last week or so. And one of the real benefits of our process is that, in fact, we can address private industry proposals and without delaying the overall efforts. And so as private industry comes forth, including those who are POs from the East Coast, and there's some others from out of state that have recently provided proposals, and certainly our process, one of the strengths of our process, we believe, is the ability to, again, to address those proposals without delays. Development of wastewater system rates and charges based on demand. This is important as well for affordability issues. The City of San Luis Obispo recently adopted a wastewater rates and charges based on demand, where they looked at indoor water usage during the winter months to reflect best what might be the demands on a wastewater system. And this is important because, unlike assessments, where assessments are based on the infrastructure that will provide service to property, and whether it's a small house or a large house, whether it's a big family or a small family, that infrastructure is really the same for all of those houses. With rates and charges, though, we can adjust it when it's based on demand, based on the actual demand on the system. So especially the elderly, single elderly who are on fixed income and don't put a large demand on the system, at least through the rates and charges, we can help mitigate some of those costs. Also on selection strategies, the financial strategies themselves. I mentioned the tax increment financing. The board authorized us to look at redevelopment agencies and a number of other items in order to look at the full plate of issues that will help to address affordability issues. And then last in our overall project selection strategies adopted on August 14th are the water resource strategies. This is important as well from analyzing the costs. Certainly the developed property owners within the prohibition zone have the largest benefit associated with the project since it is about 85% built out. Undeveloped properties are also the next largest slice of the pie. But the water supply enhancements and the community-wide benefits associated with the reuse of the wastewater and the treatment and reuse for water supply purposes is also very important. It's important because it's a resource issue in the community, but it's also important because those benefits on our community-wide basis. And one of the things that we're really pleased is that there has been recent positive development in this this area. The community, the county, and the LOCSD and the two private water purveyors in the community have been in a groundwater adjudication process for quite some time. The LOCSD, at their last meeting, adopted what's called the interlocutory stipulated judgment, and that's to help move forward the groundwater management plan. And today in my office, I should have that agreement executed by the LOCSD as well as the two private water purveyors, so I can get it on the board's agenda for September 18th. And there is a provision in there where the water companies are agreeable to considering helping him pay for a portion of the costs associated with the wastewater project. Again, identifying that there are water supply enhancements that benefit the entire community and not just those in the prohibition zone. We're very pleased that working with the other agencies, we're moving forward on those efforts, very important, and we will be proposing We do have a recommendation for the board that should be on the September 18th agenda. We anticipate it will probably take about 12 months for the development of that water management plan, and that works out well, extremely well, actually, because that water management plan is critical to identifying the various resources that are needed for undeveloped properties, and we can then dovetail bringing the undeveloped property owners into the wastewater project in the latter part of 2008 as we're going through our environmental efforts and project selection and site selection efforts. In essence, we're sort of dovetailing the undeveloped property owners into the latter part of our planning efforts or environmental efforts. Again, appreciation for the water purveyors in the community for helping us with this portion of our efforts. On schedule, I've shared this before and just sort of always like to reiterate it. The Corolla report really had parallel efforts. On the top, we show the efforts associated with sort of the project development. The TAC has completed their pro-con analysis. Final project options are shaping up. I mentioned that a couple of private proposals are being put on the table, and certainly the process has been well designed to address those. And then we'll get into our CEQA next year, the community survey and the due diligence process leading to a project selected. The second component of the parallel efforts, the fine screen report provides a base. It's the basis of evidence for the assessment engineering report, and we're right there right now on that Prop 218 vote. Also shared this previously, our overall long-term schedule is that 2008 would be focusing in on our environmental and our permitting and our due diligence, which is specific to AB 2701, with 2009 then being design. And the two-year period, 08 and 09, we have a lot of confidence in. It may very well be that the environmental and the permitting and the project selection efforts take us more than 2008, but we don't believe that a design should take a full year. And so we have a lot of confidence in the combined 08-09 schedule, which would then allow us to initiate construction in 2010. But again, some of the 08 effort might actually slip into the early part of 2009. With looking at completion of construction a couple years after, by the end of 2012. And one of the important points I want to make also on the overall schedule is that even though property owners are voting now on the Prop 218 vote, we would not anticipate that they would actually start paying assessments until December of 2009. The earliest that assessments could be levied would be December of 2008. And those would ratchet up because assessment bonds would be sold in series, and the initial ones for our early work efforts obviously wouldn't include construction. So the first, the previous chart that I showed of $907 semi-annually, it would not start at that level right away. That would take a few years to get up to that. Again, the earliest would be December of 2008. I think that's unlikely, though, because under AB 2701, the Board of Supervisors cannot actually levy assessments until they adopt a resolution making a commitment to actually implement a project. And there's been a little bit of a sort of comments out in the community that the board could levy assessments before making a commitment to do a project, and AB 2701 specifically precludes the board from doing that. So the earliest could be December of 2008. I think that's unlikely. I think it's more likely that assessments would start in December of 2009. This I'm not going to get into detail, but this was one that I like to show to people because it is a complicated project.
You thought he was busy before.
Yeah. You know, we've had a couple of comments that we've made this also complicated, and you know, the answer is that implementing significant public works projects in the state of California is a complicated effort. It involves finance, environmental, engineering, certainly the socio-political aspects and the regulatory environment are all we have to be very cognizant of all of that in our implementation of projects. But what we did, and this is again looking forward and lining up our teams and looking at our future work efforts, this is a tool that we developed for our project team so that we can see what, you know, the different individuals work on these different components, and they need to make sure that they're very clear on how their work efforts relate to the work efforts of other members on the team. A summary of our overall project efforts, then again, is developing community options. That's been being worked on by county staff and consultants. The pro-con analysis of community options has been done by the TAC, and they are continuing to work with us. They will be participating in the September 29th open house in the community. Assessment engineering is county staff, consultants, legal counsel. Adopting the assessments was the board's action, and then the Prop 218 vote is of the property owners. These are the major work efforts that are essentially accomplished. Certainly the 218 vote, some of the property owners, many of them still have to vote, but this is the work that's been done so far. Future efforts, this due diligence, county staff, legal counsel, and board supervisors, this is going to be very important. And the due diligence structured in AB 2701. As I have mentioned before, very appreciative of the efforts of your staff in identifying valid concerns so that we can address them as soon as possible. But the due diligence period is really set up so that after the Prop 218 vote, we have the ability to work with other agencies and make sure that we're all well coordinated for the implementation of a project. Once the board is satisfied of that, then after the due diligence, the intent is that they would adopt a resolution to make a formal commitment for the implementation of a project. And again, the board cannot levy assessments until they have made that commitment. Community survey on preferred project options. We're going to be sending that to property owners, residents, and business owners, whereas the Prop 218 vote is a vote under the California Constitution of the property owners. Identifying what's acceptable to the community and community preferences is really a community-wide issue, both within the prohibition zone and outside the prohibition zone, and that's an important issue in addressing the different ways that we might implement a project. CEQA and regulatory compliance, as usual, county staff, consultants, and the Board of Supervisors with all the required public comment periods. And then final project selection is in the hands of the County Board of Supervisors, which is consistent with projects throughout the state of California among all agencies. Project financing, I'm just wrapping up here, county staff. We do, and we have our board's authorization to look at private financing, which is one of the proposals by private industry. Keeping all of the different financing options on the table, I think, is very important. Project design, county staff, and consulting engineers. I think that I should broaden consulting engineers to include those who could be doing the design through a design build process. But in any case, moving on, again, county staff and consultants on permitting, construction, private industry contractors. This is, you know, private industry is where we pay the vast majority of dollars for the implementation of a project, and that's why getting private industry competition for a least costly project is critical for us being able to deliver the best project for the community. Also critical why the Prop 218 needs to come prior to that competition process. And then overall project operations, it can either be done by the county or private operators depending on how that gets set up after the 218 vote. Again, if any questions, be glad to answer those. And for the public, John Diodati and our website for ballot-related questions.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if sure. I might, just a couple of concluding comments.
Sure,
we can turn it. I appreciate the opportunity. I would like to come back and focus why we are here before you again today. It started back in May with our letter requesting that you suspend your active enforcement. And I very much appreciate that you have held active enforcement on new CDOs in abeyance during that time. I think it has made a tremendous difference and very much helped the process that you've heard Pavel outline. I would note that the status of the existing 45 CDOs is a cause of some concern in the community. And I would request that you rescind or suspend or in some way demonstrate that those CDO recipients are being treated fairly relative to all the other residents of the prohibition zone. I know that this was a topic of your board's discussion in May, and I would hope you could clarify the status of those 45 existing CDOs as a means of continuing to strengthen this process as we move through this very critical period of balloting as regards the 218 vote. I believe that your board's and staff's cooperation has been a major reason that this process has gone in the very positive manner that it has. I think your forbearance on enforcement has given the community the time to concentrate on the many significant technical and financial matters that have been put before it. And I would observe to you that that another reason for this is the responsiveness of our project team and our technical advisory committee to a considerable amount of public input. As Pablo indicated, there have been numerous meetings. At every opportunity for public comment, there has been considerable public comment. And the gist of those public comments is summarized in the attachment F of your staff report, which I think gives a very clear overview. I would note, as you look through attachment F, you will see a wide range of topics brought over and a number of concerns, many of which have been brought up very many times. And having been to a number of the meetings and certainly experienced firsthand through our board of supervisors meetings and my office hours, Pavo and the project team and the TAC have done an outstanding job responding to every comment that's been put before them. I'd like to thank Pavo and the project team, both our in-house and our consultants. The volunteer members of the Technical Advisory Committee have done an outstanding job. And I would reiterate our thanks to you for the opportunity to appear, for the cooperation of your board as regards its enforcement intentions, and the cooperation of your staff. I think it's been a very productive relationship that we have developed over the last several months as the complexities of this project has moved forward. I think that your help in this matter has been invaluable. So with that, I will turn you loose on Pablo, if that's your pleasure, and appreciate to answer any questions that I might be able to.
Okay, thank you. What the protest hearing is October 23rd. Is that the day that the ballots are due?
That is correct, that they have to be in our hands, in the board of the clerk's hands, by October 23rd, not postmarked. Also, because some people have already turned in ballots, interestingly enough, if somebody hears something that changes their mind and they've already turned in a ballot, they do have the ability to go in there, request their ballot back, and resubmit it as long as they do so before the end of the public hearing on October 23rd.
And so what is a protest hearing like? What actually happens?
Well, they can be short or they could be long. We've certainly had some protest hearings that, just there is no public comment. But in essence, it's the last opportunity for individuals to go make public comments and to, influence how others might vote. And so people can go to the protest hearing. They can hear, what their neighbors have to say. They can raise their hand and say, I want to change my vote because I just finally heard the argument that I like. But it's the overall process. The reason why it's called a protest hearing is just the historically where governing boards had the authority to implement assessment districts if the property owners did not want that assessments to be implemented, then they had to protest. And it used to be prior to Prop 218 that it was based on land area or some other standards, and more than 50% had to actually protest. But today, it's based on the actual ballots. And so if somebody wants to support, they need to vote yes. If somebody wants to oppose, they need to vote no. And then all of the votes are tallied up, and then the sum total. And it takes 50% plus one for the protest to be successful. It does not take 50% plus one for the board to be authorized to impose the assessments. Instead, that's why it's a protest hearing, is the protest has to be over 50%. In a sense, if it's 50-50, then the protest is not successful, and the board can go ahead and make final approval of the assessments.
Does the board typically vote on that same day?
Typically subject to the final tallying of the ballots, yes. And so, final action, the board of the clerk has to go back to the board. That would happen right back soon thereafter for the results of the ballots. So the ballots aren't known at that date, but they're opened up. What we anticipate is that we will be sorting the ballots on October 24th, and then the clerk of the board will be opening the ballots on October 25th. At that point in time, the public is allowed to witness the opening of the ballots and the counting of the ballots, and so on. We do anticipate that on October 25th, sort of the preliminary or the unofficial results of the ballot proceedings will be known.
Okay. I have just a comment to Supervisor Gibson's request, and then I'll just turn it over to any other board questions. In terms of clarification on the 45 CDO recipients at this point in time, just to follow up what the board had already gone over when this came up before, was that the board's intent and kind of direction to staff was that everybody be treated the same.
Right.
And in response to your letter, I think there were three things you brought up in there that you were mm-hmm. concerned about.
Three issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One, I think, about electioneering. Two, about
There's the question of simply having not having the distraction of dealing with enforcement while we're dealing with these other things. And the third, should have reviewed the letter. It must have been less than a compelling argument. Yeah. But
well, what was important to me was that we would just be in abeyance with anything at this point in time. That the board would be in abeyance at this point in time on any further enforcement proceedings mm-hmm. to allow the community to focus on what's in front of it right now, which is working with the county and the TAC and trying to get everything finalized and to not be diverted by pending enforcement actions. Those were my thoughts.
Right.
I think that was shared by some of the other board members. In terms of what happens at this point in time with those 45, first of all, for the board to do anything with the cease and desist order, it has to be noticed for a public hearing. It has to be put on the agenda. It cannot be done administratively. Mm-hmm. Okay. There has to be an opportunity for public comment on it. And we're just going to wait until after the Prop 218 vote before we schedule anything.
Let me, if I could, ask
sure.
a question. I heard a bit of discussion about this in Watsonville, and perhaps your staff could elaborate on that if they recall. But there was some comment that I can't, and given that not a large audience was there, and I don't recall that it was televised. The comment that I heard from one of your staff members relative to the existing 45 CDOs was that by the structure of those CDOs, there was nothing happening with those CDOs at that particular point in time. I'm just asking for if staff could clarify. It is a concern to many people in the community, most obviously the CDO holders, what exactly it means to be a holder of that CDO at this point.
At this point in time, I think the only obligation is the pumping requirement. Mm-hmm. So there's no other requirement, and if I'm wrong about that, I see Matt in the back, if he wants to come up and comment, or Harvey could do that. But there's nothing else that they have to be contending with.
Yeah.
Because the deadlines that are in the CDO are off into the future.
Right. Well, I do, as you know, neither Pavel nor I were able to come to the May meeting, but having listened to the recording of it, I did get the sense of what you just said, that your intention was that everyone be treated equally on this, and I think that's the important feature. And yet we continue to have concerns among members of the communities that somehow these 45 CDO holders are not being treated in the same way. So any clarification that staff or you could give to that would I think be helpful.
You know, it's a perception that some have. Mm-hmm. Certainly the pumping requirement is a good management practice that everybody in Los Osos should be doing, regardless of whether they're one of the 45 or not, mm-hmm. okay, in terms of pumping. Mm-hmm. And the direction the board has given that if there's anything further that's going to happen enforcement-wise in the community of Los Osos, for those living in the prohibition zone, that everybody would be treated the same. I would imagine that if there is going to be any future enforcement proceedings, that the board would deal with the 45 at that point in time, rescind them, and have them folded into the entire group. Okay. But that is my estimate of what the enforcement team may do, mm-hmm. and I don't know what their plan is.
Okay.
But nothing is going to happen in the next few months.
Okay. I appreciate your comments on that.
Yeah, but no one is going to be singled out and targeted. There was some letter that I read, and maybe it's Ms. Tacker's, I'm not sure. Yeah, that there was a concern that the prosecution team would get into the ballots and then set up individualized, targeted enforcement actions. And so people can speculate and concoct mm-hmm. all kinds of scenarios all they want. I'm telling you that the board is not going to entertain any selective enforcement. Everyone is going to be treated the same.
I appreciate okay. that.
All right. Any other board comments or questions for the county? Mr. Jeffries.
Thank you. Mr. Supervisor and your staff people, I want to thank you very much for the job that you have done, and I quite frankly, I doubted that you'd be at this position you are today. And I'd like to congratulate you on your efforts that you've put forward and the efforts of your staff. This, as you said, is a very complicated project. And, well, if I do, then they're going to get... It is a very complicated project, and it takes a lot of work to put something together as complicated as it is. And I just wanted to personally thank you and your staff for doing that. I do have one question of clarification, and it's a clarification of undeveloped lots compared to lots of record.
Right. And
on
why,
the voting.
Why are they not being assessed
yes.
in the voting? And I think Pablo has has the most fluent explanation of that, but it is a policy decision our board made based on where we saw the special benefits at this time resting.
What we did is we presented to the board what is the basic issue. And the basic issue is that under existing coastal development permit conditions, which is the best evidence that we have today, that even with the construction of a wastewater project, we would not be allowed to connect any of the undeveloped properties to the system until a number of items are solved. The first and foremost is the development of a water management plan and the determination of how far, how much development could be allowed. And what I should point to there is the level of severity 3 adopted by the Board of Supervisors recognizes that there is a serious overdraft that's currently occurring. Seawater intrusion is the physical evidence of that overdraft. And even in the best case scenario of reuse from a wastewater project, that will only go a portion of the way to mitigating the existing deficiencies. And so where's the water going to come from for the new development? Until that problem is solved, the coastal conditions will not allow. So we can't promise undeveloped property owners that they could connect. Now, there are other statutes other than the 1913 Act that we could propose a Prop 218 wastewater vote under, and there is one called the Uniform Standby Act. And that act is pretty clear that whether they get the service or not, as long as the pipes are in the ground, we can propose assessments. That would still need to be a separate Prop 218 vote from the one that we're proposing right now. And so the one that we're proposing right now, or that's going on right now, is still essentially the go, no-go decision for a county project under AB 2701. In addition to a proposed assessment under the Uniform Standby Act, the second option of pursuing a Prop 218 vote for undeveloped properties is to create what we call a resource project. And that is to not just have the wastewater infrastructure, but also include the water resource infrastructure that's necessary for those undeveloped property owners. So that under a resource project, undeveloped properties would be essentially voting on both components of infrastructure that's necessary to accommodate new development. Also under the coastal development permit conditions, there's an issue of a habitat conservation plan. That's most likely to be a maintenance and not a capital cost issue. Still, that needs to be addressed before new development can occur. And then lastly, the update to the county's general plan needs to occur. So there's a number of conditions that are established by the Coastal Commission that have to be met before we can promise that or guarantee that undeveloped property owners can connect. And
from a bigger policy perspective, we're very sensitive to the idea that we not hold out false hope, that there are four major steps that have to occur. And from the Board of Supervisors' standpoint, a revisitation of our general plan for Los Osos at the point where we have the resources squared away, or at least on a path to being squared away, is fundamentally important. So under the general heading of fairness, we have decided to delay that. With the looking down into Pavo's schedule, we see that somewhere toward the end of 08 that we should have these things pretty well lined up and ready for a second 218 vote. You know, we can at that point also be ready to consider others outside the prohibition zone who might voluntarily want to connect to the wastewater system as a matter of convenience.
And if I might, in my final comment, we have already initiated our discussions with the owners of undeveloped properties, certainly especially some of the major property owners, and have received, you know, just sort of the validation that they understand where they're going, actually appreciation also, because they recognize that water resource is an issue. One of the major undeveloped property owners asked me, well, what assurances that I can give him that we're actually work on the water situation as well. AB 2701 gives the board the direct authority on the wastewater project, but only authorizes cooperation with the water purveyors on the water side. So he asked me what assurances. And sort of part A to the answer is, well, that certainly is part of my job to try to address resource issues. But the second one, and really the most compelling one in terms of major motivation, is there's $154 million of estimated special benefits. The special benefits for the developed property owners, this current Proposition 218 vote, is $127 million. There's $27 million that's on the table relating to undeveloped property owners that we have to address the issues of the undeveloped property owners in order to augment the project funding and get that other $27 million, extremely critical for our overall efforts. Again, positive responses so far with the major property owners that we have met with. And I might add also that as we've been getting sort of the flood of phone calls over the last week since the 218 ballots, certainly this project on a week-to-week basis has been very challenging. And you know, it's been very warm. We have gotten a lot of positive phone calls and emails from individuals within the community thanking us for our efforts. And, you know, the idea of just feeling appreciated certainly has it's been very good on this otherwise very challenging project.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the board? Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. Make sure I can be heard. I just wanted to reiterate my comments from July in terms of the county's approach to finding a solution to Los Osos. for the LeSoso situation. And, you know, I think the opportunity to consider the broader context in which we are looking at wastewater treatment and also the water supply needs and considering disposal options, new technologies that might allow us to consider sustainability. I know that's a big priority for most in the community, as well as cost. And so, you know, the balance between those two is really going to be the hard point at which people are going to have to make decisions. I don't see in all of your evaluations, I do appreciate the fact that you've tried to summarize, because I know some of the details and the technical elements of this, there are some folks that are paying attention to it, following it very, very closely and asking very hard questions. There are others who really don't have that opportunity, but providing these summary data tables so that some bigger comparisons can occur, I think it's also very beneficial. And in the end, I think the cost factors are going to be, they're weighty no matter what direction we go.
They're absolutely something that we consider every day that we think about this project. This cost estimates do pose a significant financial burden to the community. Pablo and I are going to be participating with the Regional Council of Rural Counties. This is an issue statewide, and I think we are leading. You know, we're one of the leading examples of a very serious challenge for a community that is not disadvantaged technically, but certainly not affluent. And this is going to be a very difficult situation. In reference to your summary, I to commend the project team for the efforts. I tried to get Pablo to bring down the stack of paper that is the technical documentation, but he said that was a clear violation of county work rules, that carrying that much weight in one armful was against his contract. We are making a tremendous effort to get information out to the community, and that is the job of the day for us. We are, as Pablo indicated, scheduling the it's not on that slide, but we are scheduling the 29th for an all-afternoon meeting at Sunnyside School in Los Osos, where all this information will be. Direct mail, the website, my office hours, board meetings, and Pablo and I have been meeting with various service groups and other organizations doing the what I call the retail side of getting the information out. And it really is incumbent on the community, as you can expect, to dig in on this, because an informed choice is extremely important.
Yeah, and also I think the effort to prioritize a outcome that services the prohibition zone residents.
Absolutely, and let me just your comment on sustainability and cost. You know, I would think if we take the long view that sustainability and cost are not necessarily, in fact, not at all things that need to be traded off. If we're really taking the long view, sustainability has to consider the long-term costs of this project. And as we get down into this process, assuming a success of this 218 vote, we will be looking at a number of environmental and engineering concerns and value engineering concerns that speak directly to that. We understand that this is a big deal that's going to have to last a long time, and it needs to be sustainable in all ways for this community.
Okay. I think that's it. I want to thank both of you, and I commend you for weathering the storm and getting everything to this point in time. So we will see what happens. But thank you for coming and giving us the update. At this point, I guess we will have our speakers, public speakers. And so, folks, we have 26 cards. Okay. I'm only allocating 1 hour for public comment. And so, folks, this is not a board action item. There's nothing pending before the board on this. This is just the county's status report. If someone feels that they need to address any issue that the county has put forth today, you can take that up with your county officials at any point in time after today. Okay. Okay, I have 30 cards now, so we're going to limit comment to 2 minutes each. And we will begin with Keith Weimer, Joey Ricano, Chris Alibi.